Hello. If I've offended you, I apologize. If not, I'd appreciate you pointing that elsewhere.
All right, welcome back to Logic Gate. I'm your host, Scott. I'm joined by my friends.
Doug.
Thank you. And that other guy.
Thank you very much.
Do you change your name? Okay.
Yeah.
Your name is Moving thank you on. Very much.
What was his name last week? It was like Mike Check? We did this anyway.
I'm a Gilroy. Let's just get that straight.
Okay.
Michael from Czechoslovakia.
All right. Today we're discussing Andor Season 2, Episode 9, entitled Welcome to the Rebellion. Where do you guys want to start? We kind of got two plot points this week. We got basically Cassian and Mothma, and they kind of meet in the middle, is the way I wrote this down. So we'll just start with the Imperial Senate. We see what in the outer halls of the Imperial Senate, the Gorman senator is being arrested. He's basically throwing a fit in the Senate saying, you know, all my people have been massacred and they're not listening to him. So there are actually stormtroopers like escorting him out.
Yeah.
This will be you someday. Remember Gorman. That's what he yells.
Yeah. There's mention of the Gorman casualty count being very high. There's no specific numbers about how many were killed, but it's clearly galactic news at this point that a lot of people were slaughtered on Gorman.
Yeah, but if you speak ill of the Empire's actions, then the ICE agents, stormtroopers will
right.
disappear you.
Yeah, and Pete the Emperor Palpatine will... call you fat.
I feel like Partagaz is the Hegseth in this.
That's true. Maybe, yeah. Right. No, yeah. There's different alignment, but the narrative is generally like being pushed that they're terroristic aggressors on Gorman. That's the story sort of brewing. You know, it's not completely settled, I guess. But that's
the Empire is basically selling this as we were not the aggressors. We didn't start the violence. We were just there. You know, they shot first. We just quelled this terroristic uprising, which is how they're trying to spin it.
Yeah.
Mon Mothma mentioned she wants to make a speech to the Senate and sort of decry this violence and this the Gorman massacre. She's there with Bail Organa. So Mon Mothma's plan is to make a speech and then get the heck out of Dodge because she thinks that she knows that if she makes a speech, she's going to be unpopular. So she's going to go on the Senate, make a speech. She tells Bail Organa.
Not Bail Organa.
Yes, Bail Organa.
He's not the real Bail Organa.
We can talk about that in a second. Bail Organa says, I'm not ready to leave. He says, I'm not going to leave. He says, I'm on your side. I'll punt to you, but I'm going to stay here. And actually his line is, Yavin isn't ready. We need to stall. So he's going to let Mon Mothma take the heat. He's going to stay in the Senate and stall things so that the rebellion has more time to build. For what it's worth, we can talk about... what's the actor's name that's playing Bail Organa in this? I wrote it down, but I don't...
It's not Jimmy Smits.
Benjamin Bratt.
There you go. Bratt. Long story short, I wasn't sure... Do you guys know how many times did Jimmy Smits play the role of Bail Organa? Do you know?
He was Bail Organa in...
The prequels, right?
Was it all three of the prequels?
He was not in episode one.
But he was in episode two and three.
Correct.
And I'm pretty sure he did a reprise in Rogue One, didn't he?
Correct. And he was also in the Obi-Wan Kenobi show. I didn't watch it. So he's played it. I thought maybe Jimmy Smits got tired of it and he was like, you know, it's been 20 years. I'm not doing that character anymore. What I read online was it was just pure scheduling. He had another show that was high priority, and he couldn't get away.
What show is that? I'd like to watch it.
I don't even I don't remember off the top of my head.
Okay.
It was something I didn't recognize. It sounded.
Did it win an Emmy?
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm right. I mean, seriously, in retrospect, you might be kicking yourself like this, but who knows?
Yeah.
I don't care.
Dry his tears with his millions of dollars.
I do not care. I do think Jimmy Smits is good. He's a cool guy.
He was great. I thought he did a good job. I mean, Benjamin Bratt did fine too. I mean, they were both solid.
I don't know. Every time I see Benjamin Bratt, I just think of Miss Congeniality, and I'm like, no, you're not Bail Organa.
I haven't seen
Miss Congeniality. I don't have that problem.
Really?
Oh, yeah. All right. Go back to the 90s and watch it. It's a terrible movie.
Okay.
I think we need to normalize recasting and especially in the Star Wars universe, like, it's okay to, like, recast, you know, Leia rather than, like, representation of these people.
No, we need to CGI all the old actors into every Star Wars project until eventually scan their corpses. Nothing but CGI.
Just make them all holograms. Yeah, beat that horse to death.
Fair enough.
Mon Mothma's assistant, I guess. I'm not sure who that guy is. I think it's her assistant.
Erskine?
Foreskin, what?
Foreskin, yeah.
Okay. Mm-hmm. What's his name for real? It's Erskine something?
Erskine.
Is that her assistant? It's not her driver. I was getting those guys. Those are two different people, right?
Right.
Yeah, I mean, we'll get into it later. It's kind of important.
We're in it now. The driver's an ISB plant, so that's definitely not him.
No, that's...
Yeah.
Chloris.
Chloris, right.
Yeah. Trying to get all these names.
Erskine finds a listening device under one of the desks in her office, I guess.
Just a quick aside on Erskine, is it?
Foreskin.
His hair totally looks like he should be in an Elvis Presley cover band.
Yeah, totally. Right. Mm-hmm. They find a listening device. She picks up a paperweight, smashes it. Cut to the Empire real quick. We see some guy with a listening device, and he was actively listening to their conversation when it went dead. The only thing that I noted for this guy that's listening was there were about 10 other things on his screen, and Mon Mothma's went red. So I got the impression that this guy was listening, or at least the Empire is listening to a bunch of different people at one time. It's clearly not just Mon Mothma.
They said specifically, these are the ones that were approved by the Emperor. These are the people that we were approved for to monitor.
Okay, so the Emperor this went all the way to the top, and he approved monitoring.
Well, I don't know if he specifically.
The only reason I bring that up is because later Mon Mothma, she outs Palpatine by name. And as far as I know, that's the first reference to Palpatine at all in this series. He's just this amorphous bad guy in the future. Do they talk about him in other episodes?
Palpatine, yeah.
I don't know that I've heard the word Palpatine, but there was references to the Emperor, and Partagas talked about that, even back in season one.
Let's see. Mon Mothma goes for a walk, meets Luthen outside the Senate.
Well, Erskine tells her to go practice your speech in the plaza. And then that's when Luthen approaches her, and she was surprised to know, like, how Luthen would know she was there, and that's because Erskine was working with him.
I was unclear on this. So is the implication then is that Luthen has planted this guy to work with her and protect her from the inside?
He's got friends everywhere, dude.
Yeah.
Well, okay.
There's some more stuff in this that I did not catch the first time I watched it, but like Luthen is a real devious motherfucker. Like, let's get
into
it.
He's a little bit scary in this.
Absolutely. Like, yeah.
Luthen tells Mon Mothma that Bail Organa's extraction team is compromised and not to leave with Bail's team, which comes up later. So Luthen is aware that I don't know if he's suspect of Bail, but he's definitely suspect of the people that he brings in.
Yeah, and Clea says later that they don't know anything, but they know something's wrong. Yeah. And that's what Clea says.
Mon Mothma is clearly disturbed. She brings up her childhood friend, Tay Colma, and she says Luthen was quick to mark him a risk as well. So she was like, I mean, you said my friend Tay Colma was a risk, and then we had to execute him. Now you're telling me Bail Organa's team is, are you just suspicious of everybody?
She says, I'm more afraid of you now than anything.
And I don't blame her. Like, all this, he basically planted this guy to keep an eye on her and exfiltrate information to him. Like, that's a little
He is quick
sketchy.
To eliminate loose ends.
Luthen mentioned he is sending in someone that he really trusts and that the code word is, again, I have friends everywhere. So he's sending Cassian in as a augment to Bail's team because he knows Bail's team is compromised.
Augment, more like a replacement.
Yeah.
Not to nitpick, but yeah, basically telling her, don't go with Bail's team, go with my guy.
And it's a pretty desperate thing. They don't really have a lot of information.
It's also extremely last minute. I mean, Cassian shows up, 2 hours before the speed? I mean, like, it wasn't well organized, I think.
They did not have a plan. They just, like, Erskine knows the building. Hopefully Mon Mothma knows where to go.
So we know the Empire is watching Mon Mothma. We know that her driver, Chloris, is a ISB spy. What does ISB stand for? Do we know? It's just the bad
Imperial Security Bureau or something like that.
So it's the enforcement arm of the Empire that's doing the on the ground.
It's kind of like the CIA. I think it's sort of its own information.
Yeah, it's the intelligence.
The intelligence
community.
Yeah.
Okay. Mon Mothma meets with. Do I have this wrong? She meets with her driver and says, "I don't think I've felt this betrayed before, and I've had some experience."
No, he's talking. Mm. She's talking to Erskine.
Yeah, see, okay, that's how I wrote it because I was getting confused at the beginning. So she's talking to Erskine and saying, "I'm feeling really betrayed."
Because found out. Yeah Erskine. Like,
and then she dismisses him. She was like,
"Yeah, you're fired."
Yeah, yeah, basically, she tells him he failed protecting her, and she dismisses him. And then he says, "It's been an honor," and then walks out the door.
Mm-hmm. But her driver does. I don't know if you noted, but her driver does talk to ISB headquarters about her missing because she was supposed to be driven home. So that was in the mix there. And then along with the listening device being read, that sort of alerted the headquarters.
As a side note, I will say there are times, this being one of them, throughout the episode that I get frustrated with her because of her naivety of everything that's going on. It's like, how do you not know? How do you not understand and comprehend the seriousness and severity with what just happened in Gorman? Like, you've been a part of the rebel front since the very beginning. Like, you were funding it. You got involved with Luthen. You know, your friend got killed because he was a risk. Like, why are you just now like, oh my God, a secret person, you know, clandestinely working for me, or my driver is a spy? Like, bitch, what did you think was going on?
Well, I'm completely opposite. I totally empathize with her position because she doesn't know who to trust. And she is normally has these relationships with people, is usually trying to be upfront, like with all of her senator partners. Bail Organa is a close friend of hers. And this Luthen guy who's very shady is telling her not to trust Bail, or at least his escape team. And I completely... totally buy her questioning, you know, her situation and also feeling betrayed that they weren't honest for 2 years that Erskine was working with Luthen.
No, I don't buy that. Here's why. She's a politician, professional politician, senior senator, as they go on to say later on in the episode. If she is caught off guard by people being untruthful with their motivations or concealing them, what the hell has she been doing in her professional life? That's what politicians do. Like, oh, she's caught off guard.
That's what rebel spies do.
She's been
to that
a
extent.
Rebel spy.
She's not a rebel spy.
She's
a politician. This is her moment of Breaking Bad. Like,
this
is her moment of really realizing what's going on. We'll get into what happens later, but there is a naivete there. You're right about that.
And it's annoying.
But I buy it. I buy her character.
I think she's just overwhelmed because she knows she's going to have to give this speech and it's going to end her political career. And then the same day that happens, she's also told she's got this guy that's working for her that's spying on her. Oh, and by the way, the entirety of the Empire is going to want to kill you in 35 seconds. So
my escape plan is kind of like...
Oh, yeah. And also, she doesn't know who to trust at this point. Do I go with Bail? Do I trust Luthen, who's been betraying me for 2 years? Like, yeah.
Do I even give the speech now? Yeah.
If she hasn't learned that she can trust Luthen after at least 2 years of this stuff, but more than that, because it started back in season one... What the hell is she doing with Luthen?
Yeah, no. Hang on. I trust Luthen, and I see all the shit
Cassian,
he's doing.
Does Cassian even trust Luthen?
No, like, clearly not.
No one should trust Luthen in this moment. In fact, his motives, I trust his motives, but like his motives might end up meaning that you need to die.
Yeah, right. Just because you're on
Pretty
Luthen's
easily.
Side does not right. make you non-expendable.
I will concede that one, that there might be a little bit of fear there that she's like, oh, am I about to get assassinated by one of Luthen's people? Okay, fair, because he does do that. He's got a track record of that. But even so, the fact that she doesn't have a grasp of the game that she's been playing for multiple years now is a little bit frustratingly naive.
I don't think she's been in the mud so much. You know, she's dabbled.
I don't think she knew like, the severity of it. I mean, she clearly knew what she was doing.
She's confronted with it later.
She knew what happened on Aldani. She knew that that was Luthen's like project. She knew that because her sister was involved in it. She knew what happened on Gorman. She knew that that was a rebellion plot, or at least the rebel empire, the rebel, what would you call them? The Gorman Rebellion, I guess?
Yeah, the Gorman Front or whatever.
They weren't fully part of the alliance, but I digress. She knew that that was an outcome of the moves that she was making with Luthen. Mm-hmm. So, come on.
I don't know about that, but I mean, her sister, Vel, being so involved.
They're cousins, not sisters.
Cousins, okay. Yeah.
Cousins, sorry, all right.
That should give her a little, you know, insight. But yeah, no, I just love her character. I love the situation.
She's put in an impossible position.
She's
right?
in a bit of a bubble. You know, she's a senator.
She's a rich, not only that, but she's a rich Chandralan senator. She's not used to being in
a bubble. And you'd think that the bubble would have popped earlier, but like she's getting there.
Yeah. Let's get back on track real quick. Yeah. So we see the exterior of the Senate with all their metal detectors and the cards that you have to scan to get in. Cassian shows up. They scan him. If you remember, he was a last-minute addition. He's playing as Ronnie Guja, who is a journalist, which is how his credentials get him into the building. The guy mentions, oh, okay, yeah, I see you here on the list, but you do not have an assigned pod, like a journalistic pod. So he's just kind of floating around. The Empire is already worried. They've been hearing rumors that a prominent senator is planning on challenging the narrative, the Gorman narrative on the floor. I don't know if they know specifically that Mon Mothma is going to do it, but they do mention that several high-profile senators were sort of on their radar. They don't really want to let the senators take the floor, but I think, you know, parliamentary procedure means they have to allow it unless they would like to just shut the Senate down completely for the day, which they ultimately try and do.
They make a big show, like Bail Organa and like another senator. They make a big show and like a very effortful attempt to get her the floor. You know, he has to quote this article, and he has to like to describe why he's using it. I mean, it's very procedural. It's pretty interesting.
I thought the politics of it were cool. He basically says that in the event of an emergency, we are allowed to declare Article 17252. And then he says, you know, whatever, pursuant to the conversation an hour ago where we used the word emergency six times.
Oh, not even an hour ago. You talked right before him.
He full on plays politics with him. He was like, you said emergency, not me. I'm declaring this an emergency, which means I can yield 100% of my uninterrupted time to Mothma.
Yeah, that's cool.
I appreciate the strategic use of the parliamentary rules in order to gain the upper hand and allow her to make her speech. Unfortunately, I also know from more recent reality, that's not how it would play. That's not how it would go down. How it would go down is they would say, no. And then just move on.
Right. Oh, for sure. The Senate is made up and the points don't matter. We don't have to follow rules anymore.
They would say no. The majority of the Senate would get behind that because they're all lining up to kiss Palpatine's ass. Yep. And then they would move on. Some people in the Senate would be like up in arms about it, but ultimately wouldn't have the ability to do or change anything.
I don't know. I think they're still... there's still rules making, there's still rules following in the Senate. It makes a lot of sense. They put a lot of effort into making it seem like she was able to get on, but it was very difficult.
One senior senator had to
pass it to Bail Organa, who had to invoke this article and have a reasoning for it, and then it passed to her. And it seemed like...
No, it was very cleverly written. I'll grant that. Yeah. But I'm just saying, real life has taught me, nope, that's not how it would play out.
Well, real life, yeah. I was actually comparing this to the thing I saw recently of like Adam Schiff and like the interview with Pam Bondi. I hate to bring in like reality, but he was like, you know, going over all the questions that she just didn't answer. And instead replaced her answers with just personal attacks. Like, she had this binder of, like, bullet points of personal attacks for each senator, and she was just like, oh, what about the wildfires in California, Senator Schiff? It's like, it had nothing to do with what he was saying. But that's the obfuscation of, you know, political organization. Like, that's what we have here, but it's a similar political breakdown of... I don't know. I was just comparing. It's different. You know, reality is much different than what's in this situation, but I still appreciated and understood how difficult their position was based on
and
what was going on.
The next morning in the Coruscant Times, there'll be some article about Mothma slams Palpatine and
Imperial Senate
disgraced senator.
Yeah, right. Yeah, whatever clickbait headlines they can come up with. So it's actually Clea that she basically 3D prints Cassian his journalistic pass that gets him on the Senate floor. Cassian specifically tells Clea that he's done after this job, which comes up later.
Yeah.
Clea kind of like guilt trips him. She was like, what are you talking about quitting? Like, you've been on the front lines of all of these big events. Like, why are you chickening out now? Like, you're clearly good at this. You clearly like this.
Oh, I loved it because it felt like a callback to when Luthen chided Lonnie. Lonnie was like, I want out. And Luthen was like, bitch, you will be out when I say you're out.
So she's like, what are you, tired, basically?
Yeah,
like,
yeah, right. I love that. Like, yeah, what, are you too tired? Yeah, too old. There is a point where Luthen lists about 8 jobs that he has sent Cassian on. He lists like 8 locations. And I rewound it. And as the audience... we're only aware of 3 of them, which was Ferrix, Aldani, and Gorman. So the implication is that in the off season, Luthen has Cassian going out being the front man on several of these high profile rebellion style things that we're not even aware of. So Cassian's been involved in a lot of stuff that we've seen, but even more so stuff that we have not seen. In the exterior of the Senate, Cassian meets up with, that's Erskine, right? The guy that he meets up with and says, I have friends everywhere. And then they team up to get Mon Mothma out.
Yeah, because Erskine's like, you look familiar. Yeah. And he was like, do I know you? And then he was like, maybe, I have friends everywhere.
Yeah, right, right. We see Bail Organa's 3-person extraction team. They are on, or one of them, the woman is on the radio with the Empire. The black guy catches her talking, like, oh, what are you doing on the radio? Like, what's going on? And she was like, oh, here, it's nothing. And then she just, like, knocks him the fuck out.
Okay, so that is really interesting. So the double agent girl, Beska, contacts the ISP. The other one is Charvel. I'm trying to get the name so I can refer to them. Catches her. The officer who's passing it to the ISP... the head of the ISP headquarters guy, I had his name somewhere, but
I don't know.
They refer to her as Young's agent, one of Supervisor Young's agents. And that is Lonnie Young, who is working with Luthen. You know, Lonnie, who's the informant.
Really?
So she is one of Young's agents, is what he says. So that indicates to me...
oh, that's how they know.
That Luthen knows what's going on with that, knows the connection there. And also maybe made that happen, you know, it may be, potentially. Like,
oh, huh.
So he could control the situation or at least, you know, make the decision or at least, I don't know, have some insight into what's going on. I don't know. That seems really devious that he knows what's going on.
That's like 13 levels of spycraft deep.
Wow. Yeah.
We see the Senate floor that we've seen before in the prequels. And several senators begin orating about the Gorman attack. Lots of political speeches. As we mentioned before, Bail invokes Emergency Act 17-252, which allows him to yield his time freely and without interruption to another senator, which he yields to Mon Mothma. The Empire, they're watching C-SPAN as all this is happening, and they realize what's just about to happen, and they're literally like trying to cut the feed, you know, before she goes on the air because they don't want her speech to get out. She makes she's clearly very nervous. She makes a speech, you know, knowing that this is most likely going to end her political career and be her last speech in the Senate. I wrote down a couple quotes of what she said. The first one was, the distance between what is said and what is known to be true has become an abyss.
Yeah, it's a pretty good line, but it's rings true.
It rings like way too true, right?
Yeah.
Like,
I mean, it's
the distance between what is said and what is known to be true has become an abyss.
The loss of an objective reality is perhaps the most dangerous.
And the other quote I wrote down was, the death of truth is the ultimate victory of evil.
Right.
Which, again, a little too close to home right now.
So is the question, is he referencing reality, or is our reality just so close to a general fascist like takeover?
All
is
it
like,
of this, I mean, Andor aired and was clearly written 2 years ago, a year ago, before any of the current political climate happened. So this is just extremely prescient and alarming.
That's true. Yeah, it was before this year, because a lot of the crazy stuff happened this year.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, unfortunately, this is kind of a playbook that, while it is ringing true with certain current events, none of this is like historically a first. We've seen this happen in almost every scenario where a regime slides into authoritarianism. So
it's more like by the numbers fascism.
Yeah, this is,
you know?
This is fascism paint by numbers.
The fact
right?
that it rings true is the more troubling feeling. Yeah.
We cut to the Empire, who is again watching C-SPAN or whatever, and the Empire guy's line is, I don't care if you have to cut power to the whole chamber, get her off the air. So they're literally just going to shut the whole place down because they don't want her message getting out.
This is where she calls out the monster is Emperor Palpatine.
She calls,
which is a big deal.
Calls him out by name, yes.
Mm-hmm.
Just as, you know, the big Frankenstein style power switch gets flipped to cut her
right
off.
After,
so it's like Emperor Palpatine, you know.
Just in time.
She makes her speech, calls out Palpatine, and, you know, basically gets the heck out of Dodge.
Do you think she would say that Palpatine has plenary authority?
Oh, dude, too close to home.
Sorry.
Palpatine probably does have plenary authority. Trump, not so much, but whatever. That's a whole different story.
Yeah.
Okay. She leaves the Senate floor in a hurry, clearly. The rest of the Senate erupts in an uproar. She gets the heck out of there. She sees Cassian waiting in the hallway.
They meet the first time they've ever
met. I was
going
to say, is this the first time that they've actually...
After two seasons.
Okay.
This is the first time they've ever seen each other.
Mothma is not sure if she should trust him. She still doesn't know if she should trust Bail's team or Luthen's team or neither. She's just given this speech, so I'm sure she's probably all confused.
In my head, Cassian has just been standing in the hallway. Everybody that walks by, he's like, I have friends everywhere.
Yeah,
I have friends everywhere. I
have
friends everywhere? No, I have friends everywhere.
Well, Cassian is there in an elevator, and he's basically trying to get her to trust him. He was like, I was on Gorman yesterday or whatever. I was there when it happened. He mentions her cousin Vale and Yavin. So he's like dropping hints to her, like, I'm on the inside, lady. And then he says, yes, I have friends everywhere. She's still, again, confused about exactly who to trust, but Cassian's doing his best to at least provide his resume to her. As they're, like, attempting to, you know, exit the building, Cassian's sort of escorting her. They meet Bail's team traitor. What was the lady's name?
Beska. Mm-hmm.
She pulls a gun on Mothma. Cassian gets in the way. There's a kind of a Mexican standoff. Ultimately, Cassian ends up just straight up executing Beska.
I don't know why this moment was so cool to me. Just like this quick, like, who to trust, really quick, who what's going on? Cassian has to like assess and just like shoot. I mean, he's very quick to shoot, but like...
Well, Beska says they attempt... You know, they say something to the effect of, you're an ISB traitor. We're going to arrest you on behalf of the ISB. And then Cassian just executes her.
Yeah.
I wrote down, I'm like, Cassian shoots first a lot.
Yeah, he does it later, a little bit later.
I mean, not to go back and rewatch the whole series, but he's just straight up executed, shot first, at least a half a dozen people that we've seen, right?
I want to talk about this for just a sec, because you touched on it. I love this scene. To me, this is the climax of the entire episode. This very brief interaction.
Same with me. I don't know why it was just like the moment that really clicked for me, or like the most...
I mean, you guys are packed wrong, but go on.
The pieces are set from the rebellion side. The objective is extract Mothma, and you've got your star player, you know, Cassian, in mm-hmm. there executing the mission. You've got Mothma there, everything on the line. You know, if this fails, she's done for.
Well, yeah, and Yavin and everyone goes down.
And the sidelines pulling the strings.
Right. And so it's this big confrontation, Empire versus Rebellion.
Black versus white.
And furthermore, you touched on it. Normally what you would see is this would be a drawn-out, suspenseful episode, a Mexican standoff of who's going to twitch, who's going to flinch first. And Cassian just says nope to all that. Boom. Executed. Let's keep moving.
He doesn't have time. I mean, he knows, like, there are stormtroopers coming up the stairs, right? Like, I don't have time for this.
And that's the brilliance.
Just start shooting people.
Because, as you pointed out, this isn't just some freakish one-off. This is Cassian's character that we saw from the very first episode when he killed those guards.
That's a good point.
Yeah. The first 5 minutes of the first episode.
This isn't out of place. This is exactly what Cassian would do, and he did. And it's a really cool scene.
It is so cool. I don't know why exactly, but it, like, because Mothma could make a bunch of choices there too and, like, fall in line with Bail's team there, you know, despite what the one Beska girl says. But yeah, Cassian just, like, has nothing but, and, like, and just tells the other guy, shut up and we're leaving, you know? Like,
yeah.
So.
But I am curious. You said this is not the climax of the episode?
It was not my favorite part of the. We'll get to that.
Okay.
So. Cassian executes Beska. She's dead on the ground. He looks at the other guy. He was like the guy that was with Beska, who's trying to figure out whose side everybody's on. He basically just says, we're leaving. You know, you got a problem with that? Because we're walking out of this door. And the other guy's like, I don't know what's going on. Just lets him leave. At one point, Mothma drops her bright royal blue cloak on the floor, and Cassian puts his whatever leather jacket, his brown cloak on her. So she's less visible in the crowd, I suppose. Cassian warns her. She's alarmed. She just saw somebody get killed. She just gave this speech.
Oh, yeah. It's all real for her now.
Like fight or flight, all adrenaline. Mm-hmm. Cassian basically has to reel her in. He says, do not run. If you run, you'll draw attention to yourself. Our only hope to get out of here is to look casual. And then I think after he puts his coat on her, he says, welcome to the rebellion.
Yeah.
So I don't know about you guys, but anytime, like, you know, they say the thing, I'm always like, you know, like.
The title of the episode.
The title of the movie, the title of the episode, right?
Well, it's like the last episode. Who are you?
Yeah. So they're attempting to get out of the building. The Empire is in the process of locking down the entire building. Stormtroopers are seen through the windows entering. They're locking down all the exits. No one comes. No one goes. They do manage to get out before the full lockdown goes into effect, and they run into Cloris. And that was kind of an interesting scene because Mon Mothma says, oh, that's my driver. He's an ISB plant. And then Cassian asks her what his name is. And she's like, oh, it's Cloris. And he was like, hey, Cloris. And then he just executes him.
Yeah.
But I couldn't figure out, like, I felt like he was asking him his name.
It was kind
of
funny.
Like, he was going to trick him. Like, why did he need to know his name?
Because when he addresses him by name, it disarms his defenses. Like, oh, this person knows me? Oh, okay.
We're on the same side.
We must be part of the same team. There's Mothma. If he's coming up aggressively, then maybe Cloris is more defensive and reaching for his blaster that he's got hidden somewhere.
Because I think at one point he says, hey, Cloris, you know, I've got her. We need to get her out of here safely, kind of thing. And then straight up so it's just to get his guard down. Okay.
Again. It's weird. It's a weird. And they also put time into him earlier listening to her speech.
Yeah.
And like kind of, you get a moment of him like going, maybe I'm doing the wrong thing. Right. But like, and so he's like, hey, you know, he sees her and he's like, hey, it seems like he just wants more information.
Yeah.
Maybe like, what's your side of it? But he just ganks him.
Again, I mean, Cassian shoots first again, right?
Yeah. I mean, no time for that.
Two people in 10 minutes, he is just executed point blank, essentially.
And I have to wonder why Tony put this in there.
Yeah.
Why did he put that moment of him hemming about the speech? Why this weird interaction?
I mean, realistically,
takes him out.
The driver had. You could have completely removed the driver character from this episode and it wouldn't have changed much.
Yeah, so I wonder, and I think it's maybe has something to do with sort of the moderate person who thinks they're doing the right thing. They're trying to find whichever they feel is the right thing in the moment. they're not useful at this time. They're not useful anymore. That type of person is just going to get killed, you know?
Actually, I think it's a little bit more than just that. I agree with what you're saying, but if someone has a driver, that's a status symbol. That's a level of opulence that most of us get, right? Mothma had this driver. She's had the driver for years. And furthermore, she knew that he was a spy, but she just kind of accepted it, maybe even fed misinformation from time to time. The point is, when Cassian
executes him... Oh, I forgot. She knew he was a spy from a long time ago.
Yeah.
I thought she found out today.
No.
But you're right. She knew... Okay, good point.
When Cassian executes him, that symbolically severs one of her last ties to that opulent lifestyle. She will no longer have a driver. She will no longer be rich. She will no longer be...
True.
...pampered and... catered and taken everywhere and all her needs handled for her. Nope. Welcome to the rebellion.
Yeah.
We don't have drivers.
But yeah, we barely have electricity. Well,
except Cassian. Cassian's going to drive your ass off this planet. Yeah, yeah. But then you get to Yavin and yeah.
All right. So let's talk about that real quick. Mm-hmm. So they execute, what's his name? Chloris. They get into Chloris's car, drive away. They end up at the Cassian and Bix's apartment/safe house. Mon Mothma asks about Luthen. She's concerned if he made it out okay. Clea says that he confirms that he did make it out okay. And
They confirm that?
She does not confirm that he made it out. She confirms he is okay.
Okay. I thought it was okay. Kind of like it's, confirmed that he's staying.
I believe that is, he does mention, or Luthen mentions early in the episode he is going to stay. The point is, Clea goes out of her way to tell Mothma that, I wrote down that he made it out safe, but maybe it's just he's okay.
He's okay.
The point is that Luthen didn't get executed in the Senate. This is probably the first time Mon Mothma's had to like take a deep breath in, you know, the last hour. She's sort of coming off the ledge. They're in the kitchen or whatever. And Mothma looks at Cassian and she says, I'm not sure how to thank you. And Cassian says, make it worth it. Because they clearly just did some gnarly shit that's going to put them all on the map. And he was like, essentially, he's telling her, don't give up now. Because you just started the ball rolling. This can't be the end. Otherwise, what was it all for? Now, we cut to the Yavin Rebel base, which is the real crux of the episode here. We see Vel, who has red hair. Now, did she have red hair in the last episode? Or am I just... Anyway, Vel looks different. I almost didn't recognize her until I saw her face up close.
I don't know.
I did notice that she wasn't leading anybody. Like, she didn't appear to be in charge of anything, which is a good position for her.
When she was training, she had a bunch of recruits there.
What was the deal?
She, though?
She was the trainer.
She asked that one guy about, like, whose gun is this? And the guy raises his hand, and then that was...
Who is that guy? Who is that guy? You know? I don't know.
Was that guy
I'm
important?
I'm asking you.
That is Cassian's prison mate, Melshi, from Narkina 5, an escape buddy, and he's in Rogue One.
Really?
I remember that.
You knew that. Yeah, right. We all knew that.
I remember.
I mean, it was last season, which was 15 Melshi. Years ago? So,
yeah. All right, let's... okay, we see Cassian, Trina, and Willman arrive on Yavin. Cassian mentions that he brought the destroyed KX unit. Willman is hurt. Do we know how Willman got hurt? I mean, I'm assuming it's from the Gorman attack?
Yeah, he stayed on Gorman to, like, you know, look for his
girlfriend. So he's got a stomach wound, but I think at one point Cassian makes some mention of he's young and it's not that bad, so it's not fatal.
Cassian's like, there's a force healer inside, you'll be fine.
So the plan is, the rebel plan is that Mon Mothma is going to make one follow-up speech and then... the rebels will bring her to Yavin. So I assume she's going to some unknown location. She's going to be doing an Al-Qaeda-style speech from a cave that gets broadcast on whatever the equivalent of TikTok is in this universe, and then she is going to join them on Yavin?
That's not how I interpreted, but that's...
Yeah. Okay. I had to kind of look a little bit of this up, but basically, like, they, instead of going to Yavin 4 with Cassian, they want her to make a special speech, and they need her to go with the Ghost Crew, and which Draven says the Gold Squadron, which is in reference to the animated series Star Wars Rebels, where she actually does make this speech, and she's with like a different crew.
I mean, Gold Squadron's in episode 4, right?
I don't know. Yeah, I don't know about that. But
okay.
I guess so they have this sort of like presentational crew to bring her to Yavin, which is how it played out in this animated series. So it's sort of like a backdoor way of like keeping the canon with that animated show and then also like writing in that into the story here,
but
I guess.
I mean, it's not a total shoehorn. It did feel like a bit of a shoehorn, but not a total one because Cassian, while involved with the Rebel Alliance, is not strictly a part of the Rebel Alliance. He's Luthen's boy.
Right.
He's not part of the Rebellion. So they want Mothma to be brought to Yavin by the Rebellion and not Luthen's boy.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Oh,
yeah.
Okay.
And they keep it with the canon. I mean, that's really interesting how they have to reach back to this animated series from, I think, early 2000s.
Yeah.
It's like this bad CGI show. Apparently, it's really good. I mean, people
I like the animated series.
Did you watch Star Wars Rebels, that animated show?
No, I didn't.
I know there's Clone Wars.
Clone Wars is fire. That was good.
That was good? Yeah. And like Bad Batch, I think, is another one?
I started watching that. Kids lost interest in it, so I never finished it, but it was pretty solid. Anyway. Yeah,
there's a lot.
What else we got?
KX unit? Oh, no, Bix.
Yeah, Bix.
Bix and Cassian meet up. This is the first time they've seen each other. He's been off doing clandestine missions for Luthen. He's a little on edge. She makes him some tea to help him sleep. He looks her in the eyes and says, "I'm done." So he's echoing what he had told Clea earlier. "That was my last thing. I can't do this rebellion thing anymore." He wants to leave and find some quiet place to live with Bix. He said there are still places out there that, you know, we could essentially retire and raise sheep and cut hay and not have to deal with all this Empire crap. Cut to the next day, we see Cassian lying in bed, and Bix's side of the bed is empty. Cassian gets up a little confused, not sure where he is, looks around their treehouse thing. I did note that this treehouse they live in is awesome. I kind of want to live in one of those.
Yeah, for real.
It looks rad.
Like, at least let me spend a weekend there.
Yeah, like, where's the Airbnb for that? Sign me up. Long story short, Bix has left Cassian a Dear John letter on his laptop, and she says, "I have to leave. I'm not sure how long." Bix is not okay being the reason that Bix is not okay with Cassian using her as an excuse to not join the rebellion.
Mm-hmm.
Bix sees his capabilities, sees what he's done in the past. She probably still reading into a little bit of what that Force healer said. She doesn't want to be the reason that this potential leader just nopes out of the rebellion. She says, "I choose the rebellion."
Mm-hmm.
And so she chooses the rebellion for Cassian by leaving.
Mm-hmm.
I was getting total. This is my favorite part of the episode. Yeah. I was getting total Leaving Las Vegas vibes. I don't know if you guys have seen that movie. It's a long time ago.
Long time ago, yeah.
But it's basically about a movie about an alcoholic who is convinced that he wants to drink himself to death. And he meets a girl who's really into him, and she does everything she can to get him to not kill himself, to not drink himself to death. But ultimately, she comes to terms with the fact that you can't change someone else. It's not something that you can do. And it ends with her. She buys him booze and helps him kill himself. So it's about a character wrestling with a really tough decision. I got that. So I got vibes from this. This is Bix saying, I don't want to be the one that changes you. Clearly you're good at this. I need to nope out of here so that you can, whatever, fulfill your destiny, do your thing. Using me as an excuse is a cop out. She does promise to come back after the rebellion is after they've won. She's not leaving him
that
forever.
Was a dark
she,
laugh.
She gives him an out and says, "Hey, I'll come back when this is all over," kind of thing.
Yeah, no, you won't.
Yeah, I wrote down that this was kind of brutal. Like, I'm a 46-year-old man, and I got legit choked up by this because she, you know, mm-hmm. they have been together or wanting to be together forever. Cassian has taken care of her, left her, protected her this whole time. I mean, if anybody was going to stick together, you would think Bix and Cassian would want to stick together, but she makes the grown-up decision of saying, I can't do that.
All right, so not to interrupt you, but a couple of points on this. One, while I feel like it was elegantly written, this straight up to me sounded like she read the script and she was like, Dear Cassian, I see I'm not in Rogue One, so bye. And two, you've been saying that she was going to die for like the last how many episodes?
Well, there's three more episodes. We don't know. She could still die. She
killed off screen.
Yeah.
That seems unlikely. But
Cassian just picks a newspaper up. Bix found dead. Ooh.
You know how hard it's been, though, to keep that one? Like,
this is a big deal. I mean, this is how we... This is, I'm assuming, the end of Bix.
Is this the
end?
I mean, because we haven't seen the rest of it. Yes. There's no more Bix.
Spoiler. Bix is done. She's not in the rest of it.
I'm not sure how I feel about it. I appreciate that you really found it pretty emotionally satisfying. I just didn't love how the Bix that I knew... It feels so passive and, like, very, like... woman kind of thing where, like, you know, you're the main character. I'm going to let you be the main character, and I'm just going to go off and be a figment of your imagination.
I disagree, like, because Cassian's been using her as an excuse for the entire season. I mean, he went and yelled at Luthen, like, keep Bix out of it. Don't put her on missions. He's been protecting her.
Then break up with him and join some other rebel
her for this whole time. And I don't know if she's sick of it. Or she wants him to, you know, fulfill his destiny or whatever. I think that was a really tough decision for her to you know, what's that saying? If you love someone, set them free, right? I mean, that's what she's doing here. Is
but
she's
also
freeing
fleeing.
Him from his burden of having to protect her.
Yeah, I get that, and I don't disagree with it. And I think, as I said before, it is well written, but... I can't deny that my emotional reaction to all of this is essentially Curly Bill in Tombstone. Well, bye.
I mean, I can't help that you guys are cold, unfeeling bastards. But
I will say that moment in it was emotional when she says, like, when it's done and we've won, we can do all the things we've ever wanted.
Yeah.
Everything that we've known that we missed, I will find you.
Yeah,
right?
But he's going to die.
Yeah. But you know, that makes it emotional.
Right, right.
Yeah.
But I also feel like it's a weakness on Bix's character moment. Although they do establish that she's kind of coming to terms with her weakness, and she's kind of seen, you know,
because she's
a moment
broken
where
too, right?
She says she can't
PTSD
handle it.
And,
yeah. Mm. So it's all fine. I just am a little less happy about it. I was hoping Bix would go the Rambo route, and, you know, after getting her revenge, she joins some rebel group and, like, storms off to her own mission. They
may still be doing that.
Blaze of glory. Yeah, something like that. I mean,
just because she's off screen, I mean, it doesn't mean she's not doing rebellion stuff.
That's what we're going to get is the next.
No, I think she lets
the spinoff is Bix. Yeah.
Bix season one.
Bix secret agent. I did write down that after the.
Oh, and Vel. Turn it into a buddy cop. Yes.
You want to see more of Vel? Okay.
No.
I did write down that Diego Luna is an amazing actor. He did a really good job of emoting because he gets this. He finishes watching this video on his laptop, and Bix basically breaks up with him. And there's this close up on his face, and you just see he's just a broken man. I mean, he's trying not to cry, and he just doesn't know how to process it. And I just wrote down. I mean, that's got to be really hard to do as an actor. You know, a close up on your face, and you can just see the anguish. I mean, it kind of reminds me of that, like the end of what were you just talking about? Reservoir Dogs, where Harvey Keitel finds out that he's a cop and he's been defending him the whole time, and he just melts down. He was like, you know, and it cuts off from his face, and he just moans like, oh, this whole time I've been wrong. Very good emoting. That's all. I'll leave it at that.
And he's like running out looking for the shuttle.
And he runs out. Yeah. So the next thing he does is run to the shuttle platform, and she is long gone.
It's a pretty good end to Bix, but it's not like a 10 out of 10 for me. But
one door closes, next door opens.
You want to talk about it? So the one last scene, Doug, take it.
The introduction of the greatest droid in the entire Star Wars franchise.
I did think it was interesting the way they did it was that they take these two pieces of this robot, they put it back together, they reprogram it, and then they tie it down, and then they all arm themselves and stand around. They're like, I'm going to turn this thing on, but it may go haywire.
You might hear the word reprogram thrown out, but I can assure you it's not an exact science. It's more engineering and wiring.
Yeah, he says, yeah, I like how they set this particular droid situation up much better than B2, right? He says, you may hear blather about programming that would make you think it's, you know, done at a console, but it's more about impulse suppression and engineering and wiring issue. It's like the cortex swap. So it's sort of this machine that's not fully understood.
So it's more hardware than software?
Maybe, I don't know. But it's still a machine, and it's not a real person with emotions. It's a thing that you need to, you know, operate.
It's kind of a sassy machine, though, and I fucking love it.
I like its line. What was his line? It just said,
"If I've offended you, I apologize."
Yeah, yeah.
Please stop pointing your guns at me, essentially. Yeah.
Yeah,
so,
that was good.
Spoiler alert, that's what happens. K2SO is born.
Welcome back, Alan Tudyk.
Yeah.
We missed you.
I did get some Frankenstein-style vibes because they have K2 tied down and there's electricity coursing through it, you know, like in the old school, you know,
and
Frankenstein.
And they plug its like brain in, like the cortex swap is what they call it.
I feel bad because Cassian's like, you know, give me your gun. And he turns to the guy next to him. The guy next to him's like, yeah, okay, but what the hell am I going to do?
Yeah. Anyway, that's the end of the episode. I'll go first. I enjoyed it. I thought it was good. I was expecting more from Mothma's speech, maybe only because it was built up online so much. It was quick. It was to the point. And again, I thought the Bix Cassian thing at the end was more impactful. So really good episode. I'll give it a 9 out of 10. It is worth noting this is the episode that Dan Gilroy won the Emmy for, right? Not the last episode, which is honestly kind of surprising to me, but still a really good episode.
Yeah, as far as writing goes, this may have better writing as far as like dialogue and like, yeah. So, and that's what he won for was like writing, I believe. Whereas like episode 8 won for like set design, I think, or production design. So
okay.
It makes sense.
I can see it.
IMDb has this rated at a 9.6. out of 10. I'm going to go with like a 9.3, very high end episode. I thought the Bix, I had some criticisms about the end of Bix. I pretty much didn't have any criticisms over anything else in the episode. But I would say that I was kind of expecting Mon's speech to blow me away a little bit, but it was what it needed to be. It was exactly, because what they're really trying to do is get across information and really establish, you know, the enemy and name Palpatine, you know. So that's it got the job done. But 9.3 is mine.
There were definitely some big moments in this episode, like Palpatine being named explicitly, you know, Mothma finally being introduced to the Rebel Alliance, the parting of Bix from the saga. There were some big key moments. That said, this was not a bigger episode than the Gorman Massacre. Like, as far as the climax of the story goes, you can't juxtapose the death of hundreds of people with, but the real important stuff is happening now. Mon Mothma has to talk in front of a bunch of people. Like, that's not the same. It's not the same ballpark.
Talking is important.
I don't disagree that it's important, but the way that they're juxtaposed one after the other, and this being the third episode in their three-episode arcs, makes it feel like this is supposed to hold a position of more importance than the previous episode, and I just don't feel like that. I know that chronologically you can't switch the order of that because it makes no sense for her to give a speech before everything goes down. But even so, it just didn't.
Do you think they could have got away with the Gorman Massacre being the last episode and then fast forward a year and Mon Mothma gives her speech? I mean,
that probably would have worked thematically a little better.
I don't know how you make it work if it's a year later, but
the point was to get ahead of the narrative, or at least combat that narrative, that immediate narrative of the Gorman Massacre.
I can't say that I would write it any better, and it's very easy for me to sit back and criticize everything, But I can say from an audience perspective, from my sense as a viewer, this felt less than the previous episode.
That, I mean, but that's setting the bar pretty high, because that last episode was, in my mind, a literal 10 out of 10 perfect piece of television.
I don't agree. And I don't think the bar fell very low. But
if you had to get it a number.
8.5
Okay.
All right.
All right.
Oh, 9, because K2 is at the very end of it.
Okay. Oh, bumps it up half a point.
Oh.
That gives it a whole.
8.8 because Vel was in it for some reason. I felt worthless.
All right. You want to revise your score one more time? Just Bix ending. Is that going to throw things off a little bit?
8.75.
Okay. Right. Keep going. Sorry. Okay. Logic. All right. Out. Gate.
Logic and out.